Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We're taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour on the road. 31 crab cakes, 31 breweries. They're all up at BaltimorePositive.com right now. Not all, but most. We're moving some stuff around. We're going to Western Maryland. We're going to Ocean City. We're going to Cambridge. We're probably coming near you if you're out in Carroll County in Eldersburg, Liberatoris, or you're going to be up at Rock Salt Grill in Westminster. We're going to be moving all over the state, putting dates together. We begin on the 1st. That is Monday. 31 in a row. We got to start somewhere. We're going to start a Conrad Seafood and Market. We're also going to have our friends from J.O. Spice Ginger's going to come by and talk about fourth generation now at J.O. We'll be at Conrad's this week. It's all brought to you by Window Nation, Goodwill, and our friends at the Restaurant Association of Maryland. And they got Restaurant Week coming up in September as well. I'll be giving Maryland scratch-offs as well. We call these things wise conversations because I have guests like this on. And I had to reach to this guy right away because we don't just share fondness for the 1983 Orioles or the business of sports or how officiating works or like any of this. At the core, Marty Conway and I are Bruce Springsteen fans. And we have attended a Bruce Springsteen concert together. Did you do Baltimore with me or DC? Which one did you do?
It was Baltimore at the arena in 2016.
Wow. That's pretty good. Did you help me carry Bruce? Were you a part of that?
Yeah, I was part of that in the pit. Yep.
Exactly. Okay, because that we carried Bruce that night, right?
That's right. That's right. Yes, we did.
Did I send you the video of you carrying
Yes,
Bruce?
You did. I've still saved it. Yeah, sure. My go-to video.
Marty's hand on Bruce's thigh. You know what I'm saying? Right. There it is, man. Rosalita. boy, we could talk sports brands and good things and bad things, right? Like, and I guess at heart, when I talk about this issue, usually I shave and try to look a little nicer. But I've lived through all of this, right? As a kid, the Colts leave town. And you want accountability. And then the Ravens come back and you wonder how it happens. And we build stadia. Then we give $1.2 billion away, you know, in Annapolis to fix things and make it better and bring people to like all of these comings and goings of good things and bad things and brands and what the Orioles used to be and what they are and the brand of Lamar and what the value of all that is. But you work your whole life. And I remember somebody, I think Steve Jeppy said this to me once, you work your whole life to build a brand and you can kill it in one day, right? Ray Rice, right? Like you can have, you know, any number of people that commit crimes, do awful things, but scalping your customers when you're in your 70s, even when you're Bruce Springsteen, when you've built 50 years of branding, you can still F up, can't you?
Yeah. And look, as we get into it here, one of the things that Springsteen in his history has always tried to do, look at the pit, right? He took the front rows out of his concerts because people had been scalping front rows and getting exorbitant prices. So he said, you know what? We're just going to have a general admission sale for what they call the pit. Take out those first 15, 20 rows, whatever it was. And we're just going to put fans in there, standing room. We're going to do that. That was one approach that he took. This time, look, going back, the issue here is with having essentially, although there are very small competitors, one single control within ticketing, frankly, in this country, and that's Ticketmaster, because of lax laws and, you know, business is business, they've been able to acquire, take over, do all sorts of other transactions to essentially control the flow of ticketing. If you have an event, sporting event, entertainment event, and you want to get tickets to the public, you use their ticketing system.
And pay their fees. Let's point that out.
That's the point, right? So there have been others that have come up. Major League Baseball bought a company called Tickets.com. And so now Major League Baseball teams use Tickets.com. Like there's been ways to counter it. But I'll go back to the day when in baseball, we all had these conversations many decades ago that said, we're getting stung here because while we're ticket prices we think are reasonable, by the time you add in fees and surcharges and other things that they needed, Ticketmaster or others needed to do, it spiked your ticket price. And people look at that. They look at that like fees on your cable bill and say, why am I paying $10 a month for something that I never watch, whatever it is. And so only, it got to the point where only the St. Louis Cardinals were doing their own ticketing. They had their own software. They didn't want to deal with anything else. They didn't have to make fees or anything to do it. And they even had to eventually capitulate because of issues about scale.
Well, we go back to Pearl Jam 3 decades ago, right? And yeah. The battles that have gone on about monopolies in the history of this country, right? I mean, and what that looks like and where these fees, banks, you know, where these fees come from and saying, come on, man, you know, you're not treating me right. You're not being fair to me, right? And sports teams, and I know we can take it down that avenue, what a hockey game costs, what a ball game costs, how Bruce Springsteen prices are no different than Foo Fighters or this or that. If it's Scalper gets in control of a third row ticket, that's an $800 ticket. It is what it is, right? And some Mr. Big from the golf course comes in and buys it, and or it's a really special gift for somebody on the night that Bruno Mars is in town or whatever. But the Bruce thing, the thing that was all of it's about verified, right? Pearl Jam's done a great job of that. If you're a fan, Google it. If not, and I mean, look, the Orioles don't have enough fans. The Ravens don't have enough fans. They used to have poor suckers licenses. Now they have empty seats and you can go click and you want to see the Dolphins, you click and it's $138 or whatever they're trying to get for it at this point. But I would say for the marketplace, I don't think any human being, and not just old geezers that only go to Bruce shows and listen to E Street Radio all day and they've never checked out a band and haven't been to a club in 20 years or haven't been to Anthem and didn't go see the Dead at wherever, or they haven't been to Meriwether to see Jackson Brown or sat on the pier to see ZZ Top like I did this week. Most of us understand that that they're this verified Bouja, we put in, we get our thing, maybe we get a code. Nestor wasn't lucky. Some people think that it has to do with the algorithm, how much money you spend with the ticket. I don't know what the hocus pocus is. I hope there is no hocus pocus, but I know there is. It's like the early days of the fantasy baseball, football gaming, where the guys running the company were winning the $1 million jackpots. You know what I'm saying? Like that. I figured there's some hocus pocus going on here because of Ticketmaster and their history. But anybody, dude, I've been doing this forever, camping out for concert tickets at the Heck Company back when you were running the Orioles, bro, for Journey tickets and Styx tickets and all the things that I have my Pacifica belt buck, Van Halen, all that, The Who. I went to all those shows. I have all those ticket stubs. They're all really good seats. They didn't happen easily. They didn't happen because I was hooked up in 1983. They happened because I slept on a cot for a day and a half out on Reisterstown Road. They really good Chinese food. In the modern era, we're used to all of this. What we're not used to is Bruce Springsteen offering me a $3,400 ticket in the 100 level in Houston, which had happened to me, and thinking to myself, dude, this isn't even like verified scalper, verified resale. This is like front door 5 minutes after the seats go on sale. And to have those screenshots of $10,000 offers for tickets everywhere, I love Bruce. I love you and you love Bruce and we love Bruce together and all that stuff. This is something that the Ravens don't do that, even though they sort of do with their club seats or this or that, but they don't, this isn't the system and the way it worked out and people getting $10,000 offers. Boy, PU to Bruce, PU to John Landau, PU to him coming out and saying it's all okay, we didn't F up. They at least could have said, we'll never do this again. And by the time they got Baltimore on sale, fixed it. There was no fixing it. It was the strategy. Might pay $10,000 for that ticket. I don't know who that person is, but.
So what you just talked about there is sort of the evolution of ticket distribution, ticket sales, right? From buying it straight from the box office, which is what we all grew up doing and working in that business. You bought from the box office, walk up, like you said, stand in line, wait in line for a concert, sleep overnight, et cetera. You're buying it essentially from the box office, or you were buying it from, in that case, a Heck company, which was basically an extension of the box office, right? And now mobile and internet has taken all of that away. People typically are not buying from the box office unless you're buying directly from the team with a season ticket or doing something like that. So in this case, and that's because of the advent of what we call the secondary ticket market, the SeatGeeks, all those other brands that you've heard about, Vivid Seats, to do it, who were buying tickets from the originator of the show or the team and then reselling them within their own environment and looking like, oh my gosh, they've actually, I think, convinced many Americans now that you need to go there to get your tickets instead of to the originator, to the team, or whatever it is. Touring shows have no choice. They have to work with something like that. But what you're talking about here with Ticketmaster Verified is what they tried to do. This is what the explanation was. They were trying to say, essentially, the artists and others, as you said, got really feel like they got gouged because they would sell the ticket at its face value price, and then it would be sold on several times in the secondary market, sometimes for tens of thousands of dollars. And there were people who convinced artists, hey, you're missing out on all this, and we have a solution for you so that you can capture all of that premium and not have a third party do that. And the idea here was to do this Ticketmaster Verified, where if you had a Ticketmaster account, then you registered yourself, and it puts you in some sort of a queue to do it. Now, the second part of that is where they had this sort of dynamic ticket pricing, where suddenly some of these seats were $1,000, $3,000, $5,000. Is Ticketmaster was saying, hey, we see the demand in for these sections.
Well, it's getting an Uber in a crowded place. It's a surge, right?
And so they were
recognizing that. New York after the opera, and you need an Uber. It's a $12 Uber's $48. And you're like, what? Yeah. You know, literally.
So they indicated that their systems were recognizing this demand happening, and they were fluctuating the price in those sections based on that demand, instead of having that go to a SeatGeek or Vivid or wherever and have the same thing happen based on demand. That's what was going on. So they were trying to capture the premium for the artist to do it. Clearly, the artist, in this case, Springsteen and his management team, were like, okay, makes sense for us, you know. But what happens is then it becomes a market issue. It's like the stock market, more demand, price goes up for the stock, et cetera. And that's what was happening. And so
they call it dynamic pricing, right? That's the term. We're going to screw you. That's sell to the highest bidder, whatever. Dynamic pricing is what the price is now based on demand.
So right? Now what you're going to have at concerts, including the Springsteen concert, it's almost like the airline. You're going to have two people sitting next to each other and say, how much did you pay for your ticket? And Nestor paid $300 and I paid $3,000. And we're going to know that because now people talk about, I got my airline seat for $59 because I bought it 31 days. You bought yours 2 days before and you paid that. So it's, again, back to the original premise, which is not a good look for your reputation, especially for an artist and entertainer who really, really, really drives himself into the blue collar, writes about it, sings about it.
I think to some degree, the Stones have been ripping people off for years, right? Like the Stones have been doing this. The Eagles have charged historically a lot, what the market bears. But like, that wasn't Bruce's brand,
right?
Bruce was different than them to some degree to us, who went to see him 12 times and said, 12 times at $1.50, maybe I can do that. 12 times at $425 at State College. And a guy won the lottery. And I don't want to name his name because I like him a lot. I think I might go with him. He won the lottery, scored tickets, emailed me the morning they went on, said, I was working my butt off and it's my mom's birthday. And he said, I got a ticket for you. We're going to the show. And I'm like, and I looked, it was $425. Yeah. Really good seat in State College. So, and I'm thinking about like when Nils gets me tickets and I take care of his charity and what it would, I'm like, I might just do it. But how many 4.25 nights do I have in me, Marty Conway, really, at this point to see an aging rock star go out? And I don't say try to do this, but at some point he's going to look like Ali at the end. You know, I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, Rod Stewart's come here in a couple of weeks. I see things that are really good and I see things that are really, it's still 8 months from now, 6 months from now, whatever it is. I just feel really awful that at this point down the line, I'm not like pissed or whatever. I'm more like, I can't go see him 5 times next year and I'd like to see him 10 and I'd like to travel and do this and do that. But like, it's not a $400 night for me more than maybe once.
Well, I think what you're seeing here, this is the first phase of the tour. This is the arena version of the tour. Then we know he's going to Europe in the summer, and those are going to be stadium shows. And the speculation, and I think informed speculation, is that when he comes back from Europe in late summer, there's going to be a round of stadium shows here, which then you're talking about 60, 70,000 seats, which you really can't do that in that environment. An arena with 12,000 in Baltimore, 18,000 in Washington, you can carry that off. It's impossible to do out there. So, you know what? Supply and demand, this will work out. But there were remedies. There were remedies that they could have here. Now, again, not every venue that they work in, like Philadelphia, for example, doesn't use Ticketmaster. I don't think the Garden uses Ticketmaster. So when they put their tickets on sale, they were doing their own thing. Either they were with ticket.com or another vendor, or I don't know, maybe some cases they might be doing it themselves in-house. Then you see a different environment. Then you see a different situation. This was a Ticketmaster artist combination that, yeah, it got out of hand quickly. And then of course today, anything that gets out of hand and there's a match lit on social media and it just blows up. And then the next thing you know, but again, in the scheme of things, look, I think it, like you said earlier, it's 8 months away. We have this new trend now of putting tours on sale 8 to 12 months ahead of time before the artist comes out. Now, that allows people within that system, the artist, the promoter, the venue, et cetera, to collect money and to hold it. And, you know, as we know, that's really where this issue is we've all paid, anybody that bought tickets paid, and now that money sits, and sometimes it's distributed to the artist ahead of time, some not. And so,
by the way, COVID's changed our expectation on that, right? Just in a different level of, I hope it happens. You know,
that's right.
I was in Amsterdam Mick got COVID. I mean, a couple of weeks ago, Jack Johnson got COVID, right? Like these things just, we have to shut it down. Jimmy Buffett had to shut a show down in Wisconsin last Saturday, sold out Alpine Valley. They had thunderstorms and he just had to like say, don't come.
Yeah.
Like literally. I mean, these, it's not a sure, none of this is a sure thing.
Or let's be honest, everybody in the band's over 70. Like, you know, like, so we're going to hold our breath for another 8 months and hope everybody makes it. So these are the things that have changed. And I think the one thing that bothers particularly hardcore fans is change. And they've seen this change over time from, I could walk up in 1976 and get something, you know, where there's 300 people and he's playing in a, you know, in a club. And now it's, you know, a system, it's Ticketmaster. In my case, I got a code for DC, but every time I tried to use it, I got blocked out saying somebody else got this seat. So eventually after 10 of those, I said, okay, this isn't going to work.
Well, there's also the part of it that when you're a grown up and you have a gig and it's 10 in the morning on a Tuesday, like, you know, you employ the army, you get your kid and your wife trying to get a code, you know, like and then when you get the code, you get screwed. Come on, man, you know, or you get offered a $1,400 ticket and that's your offer.
Right.
I mean, that's weak. In my neighborhood, we'd say that's weak. Marty Conway is here. We call them Wise Conversations because of moments like this. Part of the Maryland Crab Cake Tours, I'm going up to Sunbury and touring the ice cream factory, which I didn't get to do a couple weeks ago. So we're baking all sorts. I'm going to be snakehead fishing. I'm going crabbing with Tony Conrad from Conrad Seafood late in the month. So we'll be doing lots and lots of stuff next month. I hope to get Marty out for a crab cake down in his, that's somewhere in Howard County. Or
no, we don't do them there. Yeah, no, you got to get closer to Baltimore. There's not. I don't.
Let's go. Come on up, bro. Let's do it. There's no problem.
Howard County's not really known for its seafood or restaurants.
There's a couple good breweries now.
There are now.
I'm going to hit those. So, I mean, I'll be thirsty and wet before the Duran and Rod Stewart and my Cheap Trick guys. So, baseball, let's just pivot. You and I will never talk about Bruce again, I guess, other than like we love him and maybe we'll do an homage to him next April 4th or something like that of our 50 favorite Springsteen songs and why they make us cry. The Angelos versus Angelos makes me cry to some degree. I would just say the one thing I keep saying the last month is you got a good thing going on right now. Don't F this up. You know what I mean? Like they're winning a little bit. Come up with some ideas, do these $40 monthly things, get some people down there, get some energy back, try to win some games. Maybe don't give away Trey Mancini, all that. But aside from the shake and bake of being sort of in a pennant race, right? Like kind of cool and baseball and Rutschman and there's enough going on the field. There's still the simmering of, how are they not going to F this up? Because who's running it? And are they going to put money into it? And are they going to go chase a pitcher right now to maybe make it a little more interesting and maybe put $10 million into it because it might be worth that? Or like all of these bigger decisions that come down the hallway, up the stairs, and in this case, it was across the street and up onto the roof. We don't really know who's behind the wizard chair there. And we do know this, the two guys that have been the sons and the heirs and the controlling and the mom and this, it's not good. What's going on here is further into the I hate you more.
Yeah. And all we have to do is look at the Masson lawsuit and how long that has dragged on and what it has cost, frankly, both franchises because of the uncertainty. What hurts organizations, leadership-wise, progress-wise, is uncertainty, right? And there's dozens and dozens of these where we've seen it in sports. In Denver, we saw it recently. We're starting to see it. We saw it in Nashville after the team moved from Houston. And again, just happens where the patriarch of the family, or in some cases the matriarch, falls ill. In this case, Peter Angelos just turned 93 this past July 4th. Apparently has been in, you know, almost an incapacitated sort of state, at least not able to control his own, you know, entities for a number of years now, for 4, maybe 5 years, whatever that's been. And as a result of that, you're starting to see these things happen. And as I said, if you refer to the Masson lawsuit, anytime you throw this into the judicial system, you just don't know. I mean, you can find a circumstance where the court can agree with you and a judge can agree with you, or they can disagree with you. And so that's why it's really difficult. Ultimately, you would look for something like this to be settled, but I think we're starting to understand just how much money is at stake and what happens to it. There is no, to me, there's been no indication in all of this since we've seen Lewis file his initial lawsuit and now his follow-up. There seems to be no indication that the team is going to stay in the Angelos family hands long-term. There's nobody really talking about that, of saying, hey, I don't want to stay. I would like my piece and move on.
Isn't John saying we're going to stay in this thing? No,
I don't think so. Well, they're not saying it overtly, right? Not saying it overtly, not doing the kinds of things that indicate. Now, again, they have to, negotiate a lease with the stadium authority and do some of those things. But again, I don't see any real visible evidence of one entity saying, no, we're going to continue to operate this in perpetuity. Really what they're trying to decide is who's going to get what when there is a dissolution of the assets, of which the baseball team is the number one thing, but there's also real estate, there's the law firm, there's a number of different things like that. And it's very clear in Lewis Angelos's recent filing that he intends to go full in on this, and he is not going to be persuaded. Just look at the lawyers that each side has hired. They each have a history, a deep history of litigation.
Going all the way, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. These are not, they are going to go as deep as necessary to gain. We haven't seen all the documents. We haven't seen very many of them that indicate what has changed here. But clearly something Lewis determined, something has changed in the way that Mrs. Angelos and John have restructured sort of what happens to the money from the franchise. That's what we start to smell here, is that if you believe Lewis's filings, he sees what his mother and John have done, which is to effectively cut him out. Now, again, these are both people trained in the law. Lewis has been deeply trained in the law. John went to law school. I presume that when they get involved in documents like this, they know what they're signing. Lewis seems to indicate that he feels like he was duped into signing something that indicated that it was done for the purposes of MLB, whatever, in terms of control. And I think this comes back to when Mrs. Angelos determined John was the control person for Major League Baseball. There must have been some sort of transaction at that point that fortified that. And maybe at this point, that's what they're relying on. But again, I go back to the Masson lawsuit, which has been very public for 10 years. Look at the arguments that each side has been making. There's been really no effort to really come to a middle and compromise. Now there's $100 million in escrow every day, in escrow, plus about $25,000 a day in additional interest. So this literally could go on. And will it impact the franchise? No, not right now, because franchise is in a different place. But when it comes to spending money to increase your roster, it's very clear that you've got to have more than just what you're earning through the box office and through media. And at some point, you're going to reach a cap. And when Peter Angelos was running the team, he was putting more money in from other sources to get to $160, $180 million payroll. And right now, the team is, you know, at a quarter of that. So it's nice to see, and you will have some enjoyment. But ultimately, if you want to compete with New York, Toronto, and some of these other teams, the payroll is just going to have to double and probably triple in order for that to happen.
Well, I was going to say, as an aside, the Ravens are opening up and it's camp and like all that's going on, that if the Lamar situation was a baseball situation, who'd be handling that? You know, who'd be the one trying to figure out whether Lamar gets $150 million guaranteed or $180 million? And, you know, and are they going to be here a week from Wednesday or not? Marty Conway is here. He has to go there. He's the good professor at Georgetown. You can follow him out on LinkedIn. Follow him on Twitter, where smart people are, wise people are, as I would like to say around here. You know, for summertime and for where we are in Baltimore, I said this to Luke. Man, you went to like a training camp where there's some hope and the controversy in regard to the quarterback and injuries and things like that. But certainly I think most people think the Ravens can be a very good team, if not a Super Bowl winning team this year. And then the Orioles in like a pennant race. We haven't had a lot of that. I've known Luke 14 years. I've been doing this 31 years. That's why I'm doing 31 crab cakes and 31. We have not had a whole lot of July or August something somethings where we're like, hey, maybe there'll be a September something, and maybe there'll be Cordell Stewart on 33rd Street and you know, the Orioles playing the Mariners downtown on a playoff day. Those kinds of things are few and far between. Both teams feels like it's ramping up a little bit, and that's good. It's good for Baltimore to get people back into the city for sure.
Oh, and get people talking about it. You're right. So it's been what, since 2016, since the team has been in a sort of position. And again, we've been through this, right? Where super competitive in the 90s and early 2000, went into an 11-year swoon, had a, you know, Dan Duquette run of 5 years where they were in the playoffs three different times, had to dismantle that and had to bring it back. So that seems to be the cycle of baseball. Because as I was looking the other day, baseball has gotten into this polarizing circumstance where there's at least four teams that look like they could win more than 100 games, and there's at least four teams that look like they could lose more than 100 games. And that seems to be the way that baseball has gone, which is if you want to get to 100 wins, somehow you got to go to 100 losses and try to come up through that. So it's not helpful to have four teams in any league, you know, with excessive losing. And obviously the teams that are winning 100 games are feeding on that to do that. But if that's the way that it has to be played at this point, in order to be competitive, it's not what the players, they fought that in the last collective bargaining agreement deeply, of not having teams what they consider tanking, but it still continues today. And it looks like maybe in the case of the Orioles again, but the standard is like Dan Duquette's period of time, they had five, went to the playoffs three times in 5 years or 6 years. So that's ultimately the standard, is can you get to the playoffs and can you win and get to the World Series? That's what this is all about.
He's Marty Conway. He's the good professor at Georgetown University and official of all things Springsteen tickets. So you did not get a ticket? No ticket for you yet?
Not yet. Although I'm hoping that there's at least one other sale. Baltimore, Washington were my top two choices. I got Washington, but like I said, every time I hit select that ticket, it was gone. And so I'll have to try some.
Well, remember your buddy that got you ticket on the last tour.
That's okay, right.
And don't be offering me any $425 tickets,
no,
Marty.
I need
the 159s up in the corner and, you know, some random place like Omaha. We'll get on a plane. And then it'll cost $500 to get there. We might as well get us go to State College. That's what my wife and I had that conversation. Marty Conway here. We appreciate him. The Maryland Crab Cake Tour presented by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Goodwill, Window Nation, and the Restaurant Association of Maryland comes to Conrad on Monday, to all sorts of places beginning next week. Full Moon Saloon, we're going to be at Rock Salt Grill, we're going to be in Liberatore's out in Eldersburg with my friend Dante, my lifer friend Dante. So it's going to be a good month of eating, drinking, lottering, and having fun. I'm Nestor, we are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.